Welcome back to Demand Gen Chat. I'm your host, Tara Robertson, head of Demand Gen at Chili Piper. In this episode, I'm joined by Natalie Marcotullio. Natalie is the head of growth and operations at Novatic. We chat about things marketers should keep in mind when you're rolling out an interactive demo on your website, maybe for the first time, and how Natalie is growing inbound pipeline at Novatic as a marketing team of just one mighty marketer. I learned a lot from Natalie. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Natalie, thank you so much for joining me on Demand Gen Chat.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Super excited to chat with you. I know you're a one-woman show over there at Novatic, so really excited to dig into all you're working on. I'd love to just start with, I hear you have a hot take around just how B2B marketing teams influence buyers, and what is your take on that?
I think my biggest hot take is just this concept that we have so much influence over our buyers, right? That our buyers are like perfectly, the way I think about it is like breadcrumbing down from top of funnel to middle funnel, and then they'll be perfectly ready to buy. And I think about the way I buy software and I have 10 tabs open, I might go right into like, what are your features? Even if I've just heard about your software, I might want to know your pricing from the first time I ever even hear your brand. So I just think we're so good at doing research, right? Like, we've all become experts of online buying. COVID made us all so good at online buying. We can all dig up our own research. We have so many channels, communities to find it now. I just think it's funny as marketers, we still think we can lie out this like perfect little path that all of our prospects are going to take and know exactly when, like, oh, if I send them this email at this time, it will perfectly nurture them to this next step.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is just to think about how you actually buy things. I can relate to the tabs. I have probably 10 things open right now that I'm checking out. And some of them I start with pricing. Sometimes I start with customer stories. It really just depends where I first hear of them. Maybe I hear about them on Slack and someone mentions this cool story and I want to dig into that. But yeah, we can't control as much as we think we can, unfortunately. Or maybe it's fortunately and people are just figuring out products in a different way than they used to.
I think it's a little more fun. I think then you just got to put your name out there. Just try to be as many places as you can and worry a little less about, oh, does this perfectly match their intent at this stage?
And what do you think about buyer intent in general? I feel like that's kind of another hot topic, but curious your take on that.
I think obviously being data-driven is important, right? Like if someone, for example, right now we're thinking a lot about demo intent data. So if someone made it all the way through my interactive demo, they saw the whole thing, clicked around my platform, they're probably more qualified than someone who just landed on my website for the first time. So I do think there is value there and to use it strategically. But if someone one time Googled product demos, that doesn't maybe mean that they're a perfect fit for us. I think sometimes we over-index buyer data.
That's a good point. Try to be in the middle somewhere and not go all in maybe on some of the intent data, but it can be helpful for sure. I'm curious, again, you're a one-person marketing team. So how does that, what does your focus look like in the second half of the year, and how is that different than what you've been working on so far this year?
So I'd say the first half of this year and a lot of the end of last year was a lot around content and getting our brand out. Mm-hmm. I think especially for our stage where we're at Novatic, you know, it's a pretty competitive market. It really kind of blew up out of nowhere. Like when I first joined, no one knew what an interactive demo was, and now it's much more popular. So for us, our main priority for the past, I'd say 6 months was, we got to get our name out there. We're going to be forgotten. We're going to get left behind. The category creators, whatever you call it, they're being created, I guess, during this time. So we focus a lot on thought leadership, educational content, you know, creating our own original content. We created a podcast, LinkedIn posts, a lot of data and reports, just actually launched one with Chili Piper, a report all around B2B buying. So our focus is more really that, like I said, more educational content and just awareness. And now for the second half of the year, we feel like we've gotten to a pretty good spot. So now we can really focus on being a lot more targeted. Now we can go out and do ABM campaigns, because when we reach out to these companies, they're not going to be like, what is an interactive demo and who's Novatic? We've laid some groundwork. We have enough website visitors where we can do conversion rate optimization. We can use things like Mutiny to personalize our landing pages and to do a lot of A/B testing. So I think for us, it's less about it happens to work in halves. But it's less about time of, I guess, just little time in the year. And for us, a lot more about where we are in our stage. And we're kind of ready to move on to that next phase and become a lot more targeted and data-driven. And we're still going to do all the content stuff as well, but layer on top of that.
And when you say you feel like the foundation is there, people know what an interactive demo is now, is that, how do you figure that out? Was it feedback from your sales team? Was it what you were hearing from other marketers?
A combination. So one, feedback from sales team. Like now when they jump on calls, it's no longer, you know, this is kind of cool, I'm exploring it, but don't really get it. It's much more, I'm evaluating these five people and this is why I want this. Mm. And then also, yeah, speaking with customers, speaking with just like networking events. Like when I first joined, I go to a networking event and like I said, people are like, what, who? An interactive demo? Navitic? Like no one knew what it was. And I'm not saying we fully made it yet. We still have a lot of work to go. But I just feel like we're in a better spot where more people understand what it is, where we can, again, do some of those more, I guess, advanced marketing tactics.
Yeah, and it sounds like some of that, I mean, it's nice to be data-driven, like you were saying, but some of that is really just gut feel when you're going to an event and you meet people and you explain what you do. If they get it right away, that's obviously a great sign that you're on the right direction. But sometimes you meet people at an event and they say, like you were saying, Navitic, and they're not sure what you're saying. So that's a sign that like, okay, maybe we're not ready to do things like targeted ABM, or maybe we need to step back and do more kind of brand building campaigns.
I think that's where conferences have a lot of value, because at least for me, sometimes I know I can be in a LinkedIn bubble and I'm like, everyone knows us. Look at all these people who are commenting and all this. But then I'm like, okay, these are all people who live on LinkedIn. They tend to be maybe a little more dated, or I guess just like want to seek out those best practices. They want to learn about technology. I think conferences is a great place to gut check yourself sometimes, get a little ego realization of like, okay, the average marketer still might not know interactive demos, or they're getting a little closer. I think though it's one of the best places to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than events, is there anything else you found useful to do that gut check? Because I know for us, we have a pretty small marketing team, but we often run things by each other on Slack of, hey, is this line too much? Or what do you think of this meme? Does it make sense? Do you have any tactics for yourself as a team of one to get that gut check from others?
I do sometimes rely on, you know, my CEO, head of sales, especially for messaging sometimes with head of sales. But that's where I think communities like LinkedIn, we're pretty lucky. We have some great advisors at Navitic too, who I can gut check. So I've now made enough, I guess, marketing friends is the best way to put it, where I can sometimes gut check with them. And especially what's really nice, so I try to find someone who's a like special, like their specialty is that exact thing I'm working on, and say like, hey, you're an expert at this. Does this make sense? Does this resonate? And are there any like pitfalls that I'm not thinking of, or anything that like best practices I just know before I dive into it?
Yeah, that's a great point. On a small team, I mean, you're doing everything, so a little bit of everything. But when you talk to marketers at bigger companies, I know for me, some of our customers, like most of their day is managing the funnel and looking at conversion metrics. And I just think like, oh, I wish I had the luxury of having that be my role. So it can be interesting to talk to people on bigger teams where they're so specialized, and you can really learn from just what different marketers are working on.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially because if they've, like the example I keep coming back to is, if you're an expert on LinkedIn ads and you run, you know, thousands of LinkedIn ad campaigns, you might know that an average click-through rate is going to be pretty low. With LinkedIn ads, unless you're an expert at it, you're probably not getting 10% click-through rate. And then if you're brand new to LinkedIn and you go and set up a campaign and you get a 0.5% click-through rate, you might be like, oh my God, I am terrible at LinkedIn and we should never use this channel again. So sometimes just having someone who can be like, no, that's normal, or maybe do these tweaks, and maybe that's a little bit on the lower end. Just even that type of gut check is so helpful. Just be like, am I on the right track?
Yeah, that's a really good point, especially on the metric side. On the CRO front, I know you mentioned earlier you finally have enough traffic to actually run CRO tests, but being in some Slack communities around CRO now, I'm seeing the conversion metrics improvements and just thinking like, we had really lofty goals when we first started doing CRO. And some of them have panned out really well, but other times you just, you need that gut check of, am I crazy to expect this conversion, or just tossing out benchmarks like that.
Exactly. Like when you're setting those OKRs and you're kind of just guessing, it's nice to have that second look.
Yeah. And sometimes you can set a lofty OKR, but you can't really get away with that every single quarter or every month without hitting it, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So speaking of OKRs and metrics, I'd love to hear what you're focused on for, obviously, I'm sure pipeline is one of your targets, but how do your metrics ladder up to pipeline?
Yeah. So we're right now a majority inbound shop. So my metrics are just directly pipeline. So the way I measure every quarter is I have a certain pipeline and number of ops goal. We have pretty standard pricing, prices on our website. So we can pretty easily calculate our ACV, how many ops do we need to hit our pipeline. I then, those are my main OKRs. I then backtrack it to figure out how many MQLs do I need? How many leads? So then I can internally week over week just check, like, are we on track or not? But my main numbers are just really pipeline, because that's, at least for on net new sales, that's basically our main form of revenue right now.
And since you mentioned MQLs, I have to ask, how do you define an MQL at Nevatic?
We have the most basic MQL, and I don't even know if some people would take us as MQL. We have nothing gated on our website, so we don't really get an email until you literally book a demo with us. So an MQL is just how many people booked a demo with us.
So that makes your metrics really straightforward to calculate then, because once you figure out that conversion rate to demo.
Exactly. That's what's really nice. Like, forecasting is really easy here. And because also we have, you know, public pricing, it's our pricing is pretty straightforward. It doesn't kind of go all over the place. So it is pretty nice. Like, usually I always joke with our head of sales that, like, I have this perfect little formula that I calculate, and then he'll have his little gut check as far as what quota should be and what our goal should be. And I'm usually pretty close with my formula. He gets annoyed. He's like, it's not just all about the numbers. I'm like, but my math hasn't been wrong yet.
That's really nice. And that's helpful to have the gut check from sales too, obviously, but to be able to have a formula for yourself. I know a lot of marketers have goals of like thousands of MQLs, but then they get maybe five opportunities. So they're probably really envious of the setup that you have. But is there anything else further up funnel that you're looking to track? Because obviously measuring demo requests and MQLs is great, but you can't always impact that every single day.
I think one big thing for us is word of mouth leads. So that was when I was talking about all that, you know, brand awareness stuff, educational content, that's pretty hard to measure how you're doing on it. So for us, figuring out how many people literally said, how did they hear about us, word of mouth, that was a big test of that. Okay, are we kind of getting a little more of that virality? Do more people just know about us? And then, you know, LinkedIn followers, website traffic, that's also been pretty big to see, you know, is anything we're making a more direct impact?
And what about on the customer front? Are you also responsible for measuring anything there, or does it stop once the opportunity is closed for you?
I'm not directly responsible for, let's say, like NPS score or customer health. That is our CS side. Like I said, those word of mouth leads or referral leads, that I'm more responsible for and part of. So I work pretty closely with our CS team on like customer advocacy. So for example, I help out, we have a customer ambassador program where customers will be invited to a special event and might get special swag and, you know, little extra things. So I do, while I don't directly get measured for, like I said, customer health, I do work closely with our CS team to try to make sure we're doing a lot to bring just joy to our customers, because we know that goes a long way with them referring us and then talking about Nevatic.
I'd love to dig into, so obviously interactive demos, you mentioned maybe a year ago, people weren't talking about it too much. Right now, I feel like I see it everywhere, not just because I'm connected with you, but it is definitely one of those tools that's becoming more of a must-have versus nice-to-have in people's tech stack. So one piece of feedback, or I guess concern that I hear from marketers is, hey, we'd love to implement this, but I can't impact my demo request number. I have to hit that MQL or that demo request number every month. Is there anything you would, either advice you would give them, or maybe that assumption isn't necessarily true? I'm curious how you would address that.
Both have advice and would say, we heard that a lot more, I think, near the beginning, and maybe people just aren't telling us as much. Like, people who come to us are obviously kind of past that hurdle. But I think the biggest thing is we have seen these increased website conversion rate. On average, we see about like 3x conversion rate, and we have a few different case studies. Don't have a big report that shows that yet, but a few different case studies as far as how we got to that number. And so generally, these are supposed to help with the number of demo requests, but what I tell people is this shouldn't be replacing your demo. These should be, our data has shown that these should only really be like 8 to 15 steps, which is about 30 seconds. So you're not going to get your whole product value across in 30 seconds. What it really is, some customers have described it, I love this, as like a bite-sized snack. It's just a little taste. It's just something to get you excited. It's the appetizer. But by the end of it, you should want the full meal. You should want to go take that demo. And we have ways to embed CTAs throughout your interactive demo. So it shouldn't be, you shouldn't take a demo and say, oh, you know, I get it, I'm good. It should be something that entices you to want to learn more. And we've seen that companies who do really high value driven demos that are shorter have better conversion and completion rates.
I love that analogy of the appetizer, because I think a lot of people, when they think or when they hear interactive demo, they think, oh, but I have to shove all my features, all my benefits into this 30 seconds or 1 minute, and then there won't be anything left. So it's really just picking the most important things you want people to get excited about and then give them that option, right, to follow up with a demo.
Exactly. It's funny. We often hear from customers, the hardest part is really that boiling it down, like choosing those 2 to 3 aha moments and figuring out what you want to show over actually building it out. Because, you know, your product's awesome. You probably have so many really cool things to show. But I always say, talk to your sales team, ask them what are the first 2 things they demo, or if they could only demo 2 or 3 things, what would they show? And you'll get a pretty good idea of what you should prioritize and put in there. And then maybe what you can, again, leave to the actual sales team to do.
Yeah, that's a great piece of feedback, because I feel like, again, as marketers, we get pressured to shove all the benefits and features really upfront. So hearing that feedback loop from sales of, okay, if I say I only had 2 minutes with someone, what would I have to show them? And kind of boiling that down would help a ton.
Exactly. And we have ways too, where if you wanted to show multiple features, you know, you could use, we have a little checklist feature, so someone could dive into the part just they care about. Or we've had some customers create these beautiful like demo libraries where you can go in and basically click into the exact feature that you're interested in. So if you're a more complex product and you're like, I cannot boil this down into 30 seconds, Natalie, that is insane. There are ways to get around it. But even all of those individual demos should still be, again, we see highest completion rates, highest conversion rates, 8 to 15 steps, keep it short and value focused.
And say you as a marketing team or as the marketer on the team are convinced and you want to run with this, but the rest of the team who, say, controls your website isn't sold. How would you recommend moving forward to try to sell it to them or try to prove it out?
We've seen customers do this in 2 ways. So one is, if you're a marketer and you have permission, start running it on paid ads. So do it on LinkedIn ads, use the CTA, Google ads, and then once you get some data, take that back to your team and say, hey, we've seen these landing pages for our paid ads do really well. Let's put this on the website. Or you could use it first in outbound motion. So it's funny because, like, a lot of times marketers are like, oh, my sales team's going to hate this. And then we see time and time again, marketing will buy these demos. Sales gets a whiff of it. And they're like, I want that. I want to send that out to my prospects and start just doing it, especially the BDR outbound team, because they know all the time. They reach out to people and they say, that sounds cool. What does your product actually do? So if you can get like a little, I would call it a little tiger team of sales reps who want to try interactive demos, get them to use it in their sales process. And then once they see some results, if the AEs, you know, if they have some of their sales cycles or BDRs get some more meetings booked, the second sales likes something, they'll talk about it. And as much, I always find if sales gives it the thumbs up, much easier to convince leadership than sometimes as marketer, which can be frustrating, but it always helps to have them in your corner.
Yeah, if you can get 1 or 2 sales reps super excited about something, then that's usually a win for your execs. It's like you said, it's kind of frustrating sometimes, but it helps versus just having the marketing team on side with something.
And also sort of automatically eliminates that, oh, but will sales be scared to use it? If you can say, oh, but look, sales is using it.
Yeah, it's funny because I've heard that objection too for interactive demos is, oh, the sales team won't like it. But I've never really dug into why. I've just heard that gut reaction from marketers. And I think in general, we're just always scared of not having enough meetings or enough leads for sales. But they know that they need more to get prospects excited to show up. They're not just trying to get someone to fill out a form. They need them to actually come and talk to them, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think on sales time, like, they'd rather send someone a demo. Obviously, they want to, you know, have meetings, but they want them to be qualified. Like, they don't want to waste their time talking to someone who has no idea what your product does. So they understand the value of warming up the leads before they have to talk to them, and sort of sometimes can eliminate that awkward first meeting of, so what do you do?
Yeah, why are we here again? I don't remember exactly what this meeting is. Yeah, that can be really helpful. And so say your marketing team's on board, your exec team is on board, and you're ready to roll out your interactive demo for the first time. Do you have any tips for, first of all, how to promote it, but also just how to roll it out across your site?
Yeah. So if you're putting it on your website, we've already talked about short, focused aha moments, storyboard out, and then get everyone's feedback internally before you build it. So we have a little storyboard builder that we always send to clients. It's basically like an outline for your demo. Get that internal feedback, because it's much more annoying if you build out your entire demo and then suddenly your CEO is like, no, we need to show this feature. So that helps. And then, as I mentioned, consider breaking it up We see that demos that are shorter get better engagement. As I mentioned, that checklist feature, we've seen that that can have a 17% higher engagement versus just making one super long demo. And then another big thing is put it above the fold. This kind of is obvious, but we've seen demos above the fold or that have a little maybe link or like a CTA button that links to it have 3 times the engagement as though below the fold, which again makes sense. People don't know it's there. If it's below the fold, they're probably not going to engage with it.
And what about for having it as a CTA? Again, going back to that kind of competing with your demo request CTA, have you seen, is that a common A/B test that people run where they have book a demo or see it first kind of thing?
We actually see it mostly as a secondary CTA. Mm. It's usually not companies, and that kind of goes back to the point of, will this eliminate the number of demos I booked? We don't usually see companies replacing their book a demo CTA with it. And in this day of buying, I don't think you have to. I know it used to be old marketing practice of, oh no, you only have one CTA. And again, you draw them down to this one perfect funnel and breadcrumb them. As I talked about at the beginning, I don't really believe in that. Give them options, right? Like they are high intent, they'll book a demo. If they're medium intent, they might just want to go start exploring the platform. So we do usually see it as that secondary, like take a tour of CTA next to book a demo.
And when you say thinking about it as kind of a, I guess, middle of funnel, if you want to call it that, not that we can really control it, but is there typically anything you're seeing people replacing with the Take a Tour CTA, or is it usually a brand new offer that people are trying it?
If anything, it might be replacing a video or like a one pager. So we've seen, for example, one of our customers, Trainual, they did an A/B test with a video they're a free trial, they're PLG, so video pre-sign up and then an interactive demo, and saw a 450% increase when doing the interactive demo versus the video, which is one of those stats where I was like, I don't believe it. Like the customer yeah. tells you that and you're like, no, but we saw the data. It was, they use Mutiny, so a real A/B testing. So typically that, or a lot of times just nothing, like all they had was the one CTA.
Yeah, I was curious because that's what I see a lot, is it's just like book a demo or nothing. Essentially, that's kind of the B2B offer, right? So it's good to have something for people that, again, they might not be ready to talk to sales this minute, but they're getting there. So kind of moving them along.
Exactly. And I think especially when thinking about it for demand gen purposes, like if you mm-hmm. are putting it in LinkedIn ads and stuff, when I'm on LinkedIn, and this kind of maybe counters my point at the beginning of intent, but I think there's some obvious things still, right? Like if I'm on LinkedIn, I'm probably not really looking to go book a demo with someone because let's be honest, I use LinkedIn as an escape from work. So I might not be there wanting to do more work or sign up for more meetings, but I might be ready to, you know, to see what your product does. That's going to take me 30 seconds. So it kind of is that like middle of funnel option. If we're going to use the word funnel, that gives you like a little taste, but isn't too much of a commitment.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And especially on, like you were saying, channels on LinkedIn, you might be like in line at the grocery store and you just pull out your phone for a few minutes. You're not like pulling out your calendar and looking at what's coming up. You're just browsing and seeing what you can cross off your list. So just to be more practical of the context that your offers are in.
Exactly.
So moving kind of outside of interactive demos for a minute, I'd love to just talk through your campaigns in general that you're running on the demand gen side at Novatic. Have you had to make any tough cuts or pause programs the last couple quarters? I know a lot of people obviously have been in that boat who are listening. So curious if there's anything that you had to, again, cut or pause and how you make those decisions yourself.
Yeah, so we're kind of lucky because, you know, I'm a team of one. To start, we had a lower marketing budget. We've always been pretty careful over how much we spend. So mm-hmm. no huge cuts, but I'd say there wasn't that much to cut from the beginning, which makes it easier. I think though, I do try to, any campaign I'm running. So for example, I mentioned this ABM campaign. We're running a lot more LinkedIn campaigns for the first time. And while we know that LinkedIn isn't necessarily a place that you always get direct conversions, I still want to see, you know, is this audience after a quarter, maybe after a month, you know, is there any of them that move down the funnel or booked a demo. So we do it about quarterly evaluating. We find that's enough time to see, did it actually make an impact on pipeline and ops versus just, you know, did we get a bunch of clicks from this? But I think there's also a little bit of a gut feeling working. Like you can use some of the top of funnel metrics to be like, okay, like these ads aren't performing as well. Maybe I remove this and start something new. I think those top of funnel idea, or keep using the funnel again, even though I went on this whole rant of it.
I know. Those I more, do it too. It helps.
Exactly. It's just easy to describe. Those more early metrics, let's call it that. Those early metrics, mm-hmm. things like clicks and stuff, that I try to iterate much faster than quarterly. So while I might not stop an entire LinkedIn campaign, I might pause a few ad groups. So every time I launch a new campaign, I do try to launch it, make it big, overexpand. If we're going to think about Google Ads, maybe start with phrase match and then whittle it down and optimize it. And then after a quarter, evaluate, okay, do I you know, I've optimized this campaign. I put in the work. Are we still seeing ROI? Yes, no.
Yeah, I think quarterly, especially for, like you were saying, campaigns like LinkedIn, if you're using a brand new account list or new targeting, a lot of marketers, especially now that I talk to, are being asked within a week, hey, what are the results like? Should we pause? Should we double down? And it's so tricky because, again, some metrics you can see, okay, no one's clicking, no one's interested. This is very obvious. But other times, if it's going back to your account-based campaign, you might need a whole quarter to see if it's working. Have you, especially as a team of one, have you run into any pushback on that kind of quarterly performance check-in, or is it something that you've had control over?
I think the key there is start small. So start with one smaller experiment. Like, don't go out. If you're doing LinkedIn for the first time, don't go out and spend $50,000 a quarter on it. You know, if you can test as small as possible or in a few ways that you think are going to be successful and kind of diversify, then at least you can buy yourself a little more time to get that quarterly cadence, maybe monthly. You could always try seeing, you know, am I getting demos booked from this? But I still don't think that's enough time. So I do think if you phrase it, I think the ultimate hack to marketing is phrase something as an experiment. Say to your boss, like, okay, we're experimenting with LinkedIn ads. We're not committed to it, but I need a quarter to run this experiment. We'll spend this much and we'll use the learnings from it. That gives you a little more leeway sometimes.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, especially being upfront with I'm only spending this much instead of, hey, I'm going to spend $100,000 this week. Is that okay? Obviously, then you're going to have to make a case for what's going on. But starting small and scaling that is really good advice.
I also just think as a team of one, it's how I can function, right? Like if I tried to go into every new thing I did and went full force, spent $100,000, which I don't have, but if that's how I approached it, I would be so overwhelmed. So even internally for myself, it feels a lot better to say, I'm not committing to now doing 5 LinkedIn campaigns. I'm committing to experimenting with LinkedIn and seeing if it is worth investing more of my time and energy. So then when I go to invest time and energy, I have validated it is worth it.
And what about on the organic side of things? Because obviously I see you posting a lot of great content on LinkedIn. You're growing your organic following, but that takes time and it's a commitment. Have you made kind of a promise that you're going to focus on that to yourself or maybe internally to your team? Or is it just something that you know you need to be doing even though you're spread very thin?
That was similar to the experimenting. Right? Like I tried doing some posts. I tried a variety of posts, but I wasn't posting daily. I was maybe posting twice a week, which that was pretty easy to start. And even now, I don't always post daily. And when I saw a few of those do well, and now I think we see our fourth highest lead channel is LinkedIn, not just us, but like other people talking on LinkedIn, then that's when it's like, okay, now we ramp this up. Made it a lot easier and palatable. I will say too, a lot of my LinkedIn posts are very much repurposed, whether it's repurposing our podcast we do or blog posts, which are there. I almost directly take the, because I outline all of our blog posts and then send them off to a writer to write them. But I basically like take the outline of the blog post and just post that to LinkedIn. So I do it in a way where it still adds time to my day and, you know, commenting and engaging and all that, but it's not a huge lift because coming up with the actual content is just repurposing all content we're already putting out there.
That's a great way to reuse what you're already doing because the creating fresh content is, to me at least, that's the most time consuming is you're just staring at a blank post trying to figure out like, okay, what should I write this week? But if you already have that bank of outlines that you've already written, that's a great tactic.
Yeah, I think whenever I hear an interesting customer snippet or see something, someone say something, a question on interactive demos, for example, that I write those down and then that's future inspiration. Mm-hmm. And at first I was thinking, again, going back to that funnel, but first I was like, you know, I can't just post about really niche interactive demo topics on LinkedIn. I'm going to alienate my audience. They're going to be like, stop talking about interactive demos. And then I got some early signals where people were saying, no, we really like this content. No one else is publishing it. So that's also where I started experimenting with it, but didn't double down until I got those signals where people were like, no, we like this, keep doing it.
Yeah, that's a good point about when you, sometimes when you niche down in that way, it ends up being so helpful for people because, again, even I'm not in the interactive demo space at all, but it's a topic that's come up when I've spoken to other marketers of, hey, I'm scared about doing this, or I'm scared about if I roll it out, this will happen. So there's clearly so much content that people are thinking about in that space, but I haven't seen anyone else covering it at least so far. So definitely doing something right there.
I always joke, I try to speak to customers as much as I can. I look at interactive demos daily. So I'm like, oh, I'm glad this random useless knowledge of interactive demos is going to good use.
LinkedIn is one of those places where you sometimes I think things are way too niche and people won't care. And that's the post that does the best. It's always so surprising.
It has shocked me. These posts, and at this point I have a formula for them, but they have always outperformed everything else. And I never thought they would because, again, they're pretty niche, but it, and they're, like I said, they're just summaries of blog posts. Like, no one wants to read a blog post anymore, but it's just so funny that you turn into a summary and then suddenly, I don't know, it seems like magic.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I think of all the blog posts that I have open probably right now in my tabs that I'll never get to. But if you summarize it for me, I would read it right now.
No, there's just too much content out there. I'm the same way. I'm always thinking, oh, I want to read this or that. And then it's just too hard. There's too much good information.
Yeah, it comes to Friday and then you start closing off your tabs because you just need to get them all closed for the week. Maybe that's just me.
Yep.
Just looking ahead to the rest of this year, I'd love to hear if there's anything you're looking forward to. I know you mentioned really briefly that we put out a best practices report together, but anything else that you're curious to look into for the rest of the year?
I think just continuing to think about what partnerships could look like. So again, for this, we did this co-data report, which I've seen a few companies do, but a lot of times it's companies, and we've also done this, you know, posting your own proprietary data. So it's really fun to get to work with another company and also just have someone helping you as you're making this report as a solo marketer was fun just to be me. And it just made me think, you know, so often when we think partnerships, it's just, okay, let's do a webinar together. Let's do a blog post together. But what are some different ways that we can maybe push the boundaries a little bit and do co-marketing in a way that isn't just the typical channels we think about. So I'm excited to keep thinking through that. Another really big thing we've been trying is like co-case studies, but then packaging in a way that it's not so case study, if that makes sense. Like almost joint customer enablement, right? Like if you know that a lot of your customers are also using this other tool, how could you work with them to provide the enablement to get customers to adopt them both together and then maybe get that customer to do a little video series where they talk about it?
I love that. Metadata has some really great, I think they call them playbooks around that. And yeah, theirs are so detailed and in the weeds. And again, it's super niche because you have to be using them and another tool for it to be applicable to you. But that's the kind of content that is super relevant for people that are looking to, again, do what those two tools together can do for them and fix their funnel in different ways. Or maybe it's running ads against different tech that they can target.
I think similar to the LinkedIn post, like we assume that buyers don't want that much detailed information until they buy, but we've all been burned by buying a software that says, you know, I integrate great with Salesforce, and then it doesn't maybe. So I do think having that very niche content, it just validates this person. Oh yes, someone else has done this and it has worked. Mm. And also here are use cases I could use it for. So I would encourage people to not be scared to show off some of the more advanced like playbooks or workflows that their product could do.
Yeah, especially as, again, if you're buying tech and you might not be the main end user, but you're buying it and then kind of handing it off to a different team to use, you want to make sure that those integrations work as promised. And sometimes hearing it from a customer is a very different story, right?
Exactly. And then you just get to hear how they use it. I think that's when I think about what I'm also looking forward to this year, really trying to use our customers more to teach our customers, because we've seen time and time again, you know, we might share how we use it internally, we might share best practices, but it comes best coming from another customer. And I get it, right? Like, no matter how plain and dry we just try to say it, we're obviously always a little biased. So sometimes people just want to hear it from a friend.
Yeah, and not even biased. Sometimes customers just do things with your product that, because you're so close to it, you didn't even see, which always blows my mind. The way that people approach things can be so different for the exact same product.
Yeah, that's a great example. All the time for us, we see customers using interactive demos in ways we'd never imagined. And sometimes it's not till customers get to talk to each other And we've sat in on some of these conversations where we get to hear those like nuggets of gold. I'm like, oh, you're using it for that? I never would have thought about that.
Yeah, it can be surprising until you kind of just put them in a room together and let them talk and see what you come up with.
Exactly.
Cool. So love to move on to our rapid fire questions with you. Is there another marketer you follow that our listeners should go check out, or could be a couple different marketers?
Yeah. Well, first off, I didn't include this in my notes, but got to give a shout out to Arthur, who I've been working on this report with. Been so fun. If you don't follow Arthur at Chili Piper, you'll see a lot of, this is a little later, but you'll see us talking about the report. And he just has awesome stuff also on the B2B buying experience. On top of that, someone that I love, Andrew Kaplan, if you don't follow him in growth space, Brendan Hufford also in the growth space. And then we were just talking about metadata, Mark Huber.
That's a great list. And we'll add all those links in the show notes in case you're not already following them. But I think I'm following all of those guys already. And what's an under the radar? Could be a channel or a tactic that you're really loving right now on the marketing side.
So I realize I already said this, so I'm going to have to think of a new one. But I did mention, you know, taking blog summaries and posting that on LinkedIn. I'm going to give another LinkedIn tip because I'm just having a LinkedIn day, so it's on my mind. But one thing I've also been doing is not just posting when something comes out, but as much as possible teasing it. So I do this every week for a podcast. We talk about a topic, and rather than just posting the video, I post the Monday before it comes out a little tease about what we're going to talk about. And also, so that gives me another piece of content. And then the day that the podcast does come out, then I can then link back to it in that post. I think I stole this from Mark Huber, actually, so I'm going to give him credit for that. But that's been fun, just kind of stretching my content as much as possible. And I think so often when we launch something, we only think about how can I make as many posts after the fact, not as much how can I tease it out.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I feel like the tease thing, I've noticed it with like some reports and bigger content pieces, but with something recurring like a podcast, I haven't seen too many people doing that, but that makes a ton of sense. And lastly, where's the best place to go follow you for more of your content?
This is going to be so obvious, but yeah, LinkedIn, that's where I am most of the time, maybe a little more than I'd like to be. And then also, if you go to Novatic, you can, you know, see some customer examples if you're curious to see more interactive demos.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure most people listening are on LinkedIn, so hopefully you get a couple new followers from that. But thank you so much, Natalie, for joining me today.
Yeah, this was so fun. Thanks for having me, Tara.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode.
Thanks for listening to Demand Gen Chat. Demand Gen Chat is a Chili Piper podcast, hosted by Tara Robertson and produced by me, Nola McCoy. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It only takes 5 seconds and helps other marketers like you discover Demand Gen Chat. Also, if you'd like to have a question answered in a future episode, you can connect with Tara Robertson on LinkedIn. Send her a DM with your question and it could be answered on a future episode. Finally, if you've gotten this far and are wondering what Chili Piper even is, Chili Piper helps B2B marketers book more qualified meetings for their sales teams. You can't afford to leave opportunities on the table, so let your lead self-qualify and schedule a time with the right rep instantly. And that's just one of the many revenue-impacting things that Chili Piper does. Visit chilipiper.com to learn more. And thanks again for listening. We'll see you on the next episode of Demand Gen Chat.